Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Fort Myers, Florida, and earned a BS degree in business administration from the University of Florida. From 83 to 89, he was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives from Florida's 13th District. And from 1989 to 2001, he was a U.S. Senator from Florida and served as chairman of the Senate Republican Conference from 97 to 2001. The author of Citizen Mac, Politics, An Honorable Calling. Really? His name, Senator Connie Mack III. And I'm Jack Masula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Masula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to an amazing human being who's done it all, Senator Connie Mack III. Senator, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. Appreciate it. Great to be with you.
We've got to start with the grand old man of baseball, your grandfather, Cornelius McGillicuddy.
So my grandfather was one of three men who formed the American League back in 1900. He got the franchise for Philadelphia as a result of that work. And as you know, he managed the A's for 50 years. That's a 50 years. And in that 50 years, he won more games, lost more games, managed more games than any other manager in the history of the game. Won 9 pennants, 5 World Series. Became a legend. And as I have said recently, is known as much for the man, the character. He was known for integrity, being a gentleman, and again, my grandfather, and someone who I'm very proud of.
When you say he won more games than anybody else, he won close to 1,000 games more than any other manager.
Well, 50 years, you can do a lot of things.
And he was in the second class of the Baseball Hall of Fame. You know, after those 5 icons got in at 36, he went in with the second class. Phenomenal.
Yes, right. Yeah. There's always a little bit of confusion about that, but you're right. It was the second class, but they were all inducted at the same time.
Ooh. So.
Which would have been the second year. Yeah.
I'd love to have those autographs, huh?
it's funny that you should say that. I'm trying to put together a little museum kind of thing, and I think my cousin Jim Nolan has got a baseball that is signed by, I think, most of the how many were there? 9 in the first 2 classes.
Well, 5 in the first. I'm not sure how many in the second. So.
Yeah, okay, but I think he's got a ball with 9 of the signatures on it, which would be pretty something pretty out.
Okay, your mom's dad had somebody that was pretty special too. Talk about your mom's dad.
Well, my mom's dad, his name was Morris Shepherd. He was a United States Senator from Texas. His father was a congressman from Texas in 1898 and 1899. I believe died in 1902 or 1904, forgotten exactly. But my grandfather, Morris Shepherd, ran for his seat, won it. So he was in the Congress. And then, of course, and then he was appointed to the Senate in 1912. In those days, before the Constitution was changed, you know, the state legislatures appointed the senators from each state. And then, of course, then he became reelected after that for many years, died in 1941 as the Dean of the United States Senate. The thing that he's probably best known for is he wrote the 18th Amendment, which was prohibition. Whether all you can debate about on that one. But he was in the Senate again until 1941, and again, a great history and someone I'm also very proud of.
Your mom and dad took you to the Senate when you were 7 years old. What do you remember about that day?
Well, it's interesting. They took us by train from Philadelphia. Our family was still living in Philadelphia at that time. And they took us by train from Philadelphia to Washington. And they gave, there were four children at the time. And I remember mother gave us a little pad and a pencil to make notes of our trip around Washington that day. Probably the standout is that I remembering seeing my grandfather, well, and my step-grandfather, Tom Connolly, who was also a United States Senator from Texas, and seeing him speak on the floor of the Senate. And I'm sure that somewhere in the back of my mind was this notion, oh, I wonder if I could do that someday. But Tom Connolly was another very interesting and important character during the Second World War in particular.
Okay, let's jump to 1982. You're running a bank. You're very successful down in Florida, okay? And you decide to run for Congress out of the blue. Why?
Well, that in itself, you know, that we could discuss that, that question for a long, long time. There are many, many reasons. One, I was working in a bank. I was upset with what I saw government doing with respect to all the legislation that was being passed and regulations, the effect that it had on the banking business. I was captivated by Ronald Reagan's perspective of the world, and it was really kind of my first. It's a presidential election that really caught my attention. The debate between Carter and Reagan, the way I saw that, Reagan made the case that, let me start with Carter. Carter made the case that that for the first time, Americans are going to have to learn to live with limits. And the way we're going to do that, we're going to bring into Washington a larger, wiser group of bureaucrats to make the decision about how to allocate limited resources. Reagan said, that's bunk. We need to return to the values and the basis that created the growth in this country, and that's free markets, free enterprise, and so forth. And so that was another motivation. But the other, I had a younger brother who died of cancer at the age of 35 after fighting melanoma for 12 years. And his death had a significant impact on my life, raising questions about what's the meaning and purpose of life. Why are you here? What are you supposed to be doing with my life? I had a good friend and a counselor by the name of Reverend Donald Shank. And Don kept saying to me, oh, you're a special guy and blah, 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 blah. You know, most of us just kind of, okay, great, thanks. But the way you said it one day just absolutely triggered a thought in my mind. And I said to him, Don, what I hear you saying to me is that one of the biggest sins a person can commit is the failure to use the talents that God has given you. And I knew immediately when I said that what I had to do. And I remember driving home that evening to the house, tears coming down from my eyes, because I was scared to death. I was going to go run for the Congress. I'd never been in, never had run for any office before. And so those are the primary motivations that that got me to run and eventually end up in the Congress.
We're talking to Senator Connie Mack. When we come back, we'll ask him about his days in the U.S. House of Representatives from Florida's 13th District. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Senator Connie Mack, who's got a new book, Citizen Mack, Politics, an Honorable Calling. Wow. We'll talk about that later. But, okay, you're in Congress, a lot of icons. There were two that you had great, great relationships with, Newt Gingrich, Jack Kemp, please.
Well, yeah, so I show up in Washington in January of 1983, or being sworn in. Never had, you know, I'm just looking around. I can't believe that I'm there and all that type of thing. And one of my staff suggested to me that I get a letter signed by as many members of the House as I could to protect Ronald Reagan's third year of the tax cut. And so I'm wandering around getting everybody to sign these letters. And One of the great things about this little thing was that I met all the new guys. I met all these members of Congress, which I had never met before. Reagan loved the idea, made a point of it at some speech that he gave, pulled the letter out of his pocket and said, "I've got this letter from Connie Mack, blah, 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 blah." And then as a result of that, Newt Gingrich came up to me and he said, "Connie, there's a group of us that meet together every Wednesday morning. We read all these different ideas and books and so forth, and we kick around the creation of policy. Would you be interested?" He made a casual comment, something like, "You know, we're involved in the defense of Western civilization, and do you want to be involved?" And I said, "That's what I came here to do." And so that's how I got to meet Newt. Jack, on the other hand, I met as I read his book, American Renaissance, I think that was the name of that book. And I was captivated by it in the sense of he laid out a lot of different economic policies, which I believed in. And Jack and I worked together then over the next 18 years that I was in the Congress and became a dear friend. We ended up in on many of the same working on many of the same issues. And he was an inspiration. I miss him to this day. He was always challenging you. I mean, if you got to a certain point and he thought you ought to go a little bit further, you can count on hearing from Jack saying, "Don't you give up, keep pushing, keep pushing." So two great men, Jack Kemp and Newt Gingrich.
Okay, speaking of challenging, in 1988, you run for the Senate in Florida and against Buddy McKay. And for 8 days, it's in limbo. It was right. The hanging chads down in Florida before there were the hanging chads. Talk about those 8 days, Connie.
Well, I'll start the night in which the decision wasn't made about who won the race. Buddy McKay's local newspaper had run a picture in a headline, kind of like Dewey beats Truman. So you got this. I've got this great newspaper headline saying that I had lost the race. The night of the election got all kinds of misinformation about who was leading, who was ahead, who's likely to win. The major networks all called Buddy McKay the winner. My wife Priscilla and I went to bed at 2:30 in the morning, believing that we had lost and that the votes that were still outstanding, some were down in Broward County, which is a major Democrat stronghold in the state, and figured it's all over. Tossed and turned 3-4 hours, couldn't sleep, turned the television on, found a station that was giving some information. We were behind by less than 5,000 votes. And at that moment, I thought, well, there's a chance we could win this with the absentee ballots. That happened. I had a press conference that morning, the press asking about it. And I remember one of the reporters that followed me around all that year said, "Well, how does it feel to have half the people in the state hate you?" And I thought, well, that's a great way to start a political career in the Senate. So the next 8 days, one of the things that we were pretty confident that those absentee ballots were going to go our way. And sure enough, I ended up by winning by about 34,000 votes, which 0.04, I think was the number. So the 8 days, most of it was sent with, "I believe we've won, but we're worried about a legal challenge that could take place." Eventually, the newspapers around the state, in essence, editorialized by saying, "Buddy, get over it. You know, the race is over. Connie Mack has won. It's time to move on." And sure enough, that's the way it played out. We called and had President Reagan call in probably Thursday following that Tuesday election, just to create the momentum and impress in people's minds that in fact that I had won the election. He called in, and it was a great moment to have hear his voice and say congratulations on your victory to the United States Senate.
We're talking to Senator Connie Mack III, who went from being an altar boy to a U.S. senator. All right, there was a busboy in the Senate dining room by the name of Butch. A story, please.
Well, again, that's another long story, but Butch was someone I got to know. I would come into from time to time to have breakfast in the Senate dining room. One afternoon, one of the waitresses came up to me. I was at a table with constituents, and she said, Butch is at the hospital, Southeast Washington Hospital. He's seriously ill. She didn't say it, but what she was leading up to is, you think you should go see him? And as I left the Senate dining room a little later, she gave me a note with his name, the address of the hospital, the room that he was in. And I put it in my pocket, wondering, you know, where am I going to find time to leave and go over and see him? Next morning, I get up, I look at my schedule for the day, and there's a little window of opportunity. And I called and had one of the guys pick me up and take me over to the hospital. And I went up to his room. A nurse was just giving him a shot. She left the room. I attempted to engage him in a conversation. He was watching a television. He was locked in on it. And I guess in retrospect, he was probably comatose at the, you know, but I after being with him for just a minute or two, it became obvious to me that he was going to die. And I said, you know, you can't just let him die by himself. So sit down and you know, keep an eye on him. And it wasn't long before he became a little agitated. I went over, took his hand. I kind of rubbed his arm, you know, trying to comfort and soothe him. And I said, it's okay, Butch. This is a time for you to, you're going to be with your maker now. And God is watching over you. And he passed away. It was just, I often wondered, you know, kind of, how could that have happened? Why did that happen? Why am I there? What? And so I went back and I told his friends at the Senate dining room that he had passed away. And as I was, and I was making notes as I was going back from the hospital to the Capitol. And one of the comments that I made is that something I knew, something I think we all know, but we don't really embrace, is that in God's eyes, we're all equal. It doesn't make any difference whether you're a United States senator or you're a busboy in the United States Senate dining room. In God's eyes, we're all equal. And we know that, and we just need to lead a life that is based on that.
We're talking to Senator Connie Mack. If you want to learn more, www.libertypartnersgroup.com. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Senator Connie Mack III, who believes that, quote, freedom is the core of all human progress. Okay, let's go to 2000. Governor George W. Bush is running for president, and he hires a man named Dick Cheney to find him his vice presidential running mate. And Dick Cheney scours the country, doesn't shoot anybody, and he decides that Connie Mack III is the man. So Cheney calls you to convince you to be George W.'s running mate. What happened?
Well, first of all, Dick Cheney and I are good friends. We've known each other since 1983, sponsored legislation together, all of that. A person I greatly admire. I get a call from Dick. Saying that the governor at that time, Governor Bush, would like for you to be on his short list or on a list for be his running mate. And I said, Dick, you know, I've already announced that I'm not going to run for re-election to the Senate. I've decided that it's time for me to step down and go back into public life. And so so don't put me on the list. And I thought, well, that'll be the end of that. And Then I got a call from Jeb Bush, who was, I guess Jeb was probably governor of the state of Florida at that time, and encouraging me. Jeb said something like, Connie, you don't even have to be vetted. You already went through that with Bob Dole back in 1996, you know, but my brother would like for you to be his running mate. And I said, Jeb, it's just not something I'm going to do. I don't want to do it. So anyway, I thought that had all been settled. And Priscilla and I are just arriving back in Florida at the end of June in the year 2000. And the phone rings and it's Dick Cheney again. And Dick says to me, you know, Connie, let me make one more run at this. I mean, I really, George W. wants you to be his running mate. And I said, Dick, let me be perfectly clear about my reaction to that. I don't want to do it. And Dick says, okay, I got it. I'll have to find some other son of a bitch to be the vice president.
And we got to figure out. Who did Dick Cheney find to be the vice president? But himself. So,
well, I think on that point, I would say, it wasn't Dick Cheney that found him. George W. decided that Dick Cheney would make a good running mate. But anyway.
Okay, we're talking to Senator Connie Mack, who's a cancer survivor and also a cancer crusader. Okay, let's talk about your spiritual journey. There's been a prayer group in the Senate for a long time. And they asked you to join this a lot of times, Connie, and you would never do it.
Right.
And finally, you agree to go, and you go to your first breakfast. And the chaplain of the Senate, Lloyd Ogilvie, is kind of conducting it. And at one point, he says, does anyone need prayer? What happened?
Okay, so let me. So there are two different groups, if you will. There's the prayer breakfast that takes place on a Wednesday morning, and there's also the Bible study. Dan Coates, Senator Coates, and Senator Don Nichols kept encouraging me to join them, and I kept saying no. And finally, I said, I'm going to join. So as a result of that, then I also started going to the Bible study, and that was where Lloyd Ogilvie, the chaplain of the Senate, was conducting that study. And he said, to be more specific, he said, "Is there anyone in the room who wants us to pray for them to have a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ?" Now, I'm sitting there, you know, I'm still kind of new at being part of this group, and I'm sitting there and I've heard this thing, and I mean, immediately goes through my mind, like on the lights in Times Square in New York, a message goes across, "It ain't me, Buster." And no sooner had that thought crossed my mind, "It ain't me, Buster," I said, "I want you to pray for me." And so Lloyd asked me to bring my chair to the center of the room. And then he and all of my colleagues Doug Coe was there as well, standing around me with their hands on my shoulders, and each individually prayed for me for this deeper relationship with Jesus. So, I mean, pretty emotional, no question about it. Two things that I vividly recall. One, Doug Coe said to me afterwards, he said, "You know, it was almost 10 years ago to the day that I lost a son in a terrible automobile accident." And he says, "Today I feel like I gained a new son," which was a pretty special thing for somebody to say. The other was, I had this sense, as I was experiencing the prayers that were being said, I had this sense of something flowing out of me, which is contrary to what I would have thought when I, you know, as I kind of think about this situation. You know, you might think about, you know, an infilling of the Spirit as opposed to an outflow of something. And as I thought about that over the days and weeks and months after that, the conclusion I came to is that what was happening is I was giving up control. I was beginning the process of turning my life over to God. And that's the short version of that experience.
God works in strange ways. You're snow skiing in Vermont one time. What happens?
Well, so I put on some snowshoes, went out and walked in the woods trying to it was a dad just kind of got, uptight with being inside all the time. So I was out there prowling around in the snow in the mountain, and it was an unbelievably beautiful setting. Very still, the beauty of the snow, there was a brook, nearby, and I made my way over to it, and I'm standing there, and, there was a sense of a need to pray, and I thought about actually kneeling down, but I was worried with all that snow and these snowshoes that I might not get back up. So I stood there with my hands kind of raised to the sky, asking for an infilling of the Holy Spirit. And I heard the wind begin to rustle at the top of the ridge and work its way down. You know, these are symbolic things in many cases, but there was that sense of being filled with the Spirit. And I've often said that since that time, the giving up the control, the accepting of the Spirit of Jesus and of God, this being filled with love and peace and joy, you know, the gifts of the Holy Spirit, patience and goodness and kindness and gentleness, faithfulness and self-control, those are part of my life, and feel an obligation to try to impart those to everyone I meet. Of course, I'm like everybody else, you know, those thoughts aren't always with me, and I struggle to continue to move closer to God. But that was that experience.
We're talking to Senator Connie Mack, who was one of the Florida senators from 1989 to 2001. He's the first Republican in Florida history to be reelected to the Senate. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Rasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Senator Connie Mack III. He's got a new book out entitled Citizen Mack, Politics, an Honorable Calling. Senator, in about 2001, Doug Coe introduces you to our mutual friend, great man, Chuck McLeod, and Chuck takes you to Haiti to meet with President Jean Aristide against the State Department's wishes. Tell us about that trip, please.
Well, it was my first trip with Jack Willamy and with Chuck McLeod, and we were just really getting to know each other in that process, if you will. And Chuck and Jack and I agreed that certain people that we would try to meet with while we were in Haiti, and you know, obviously meeting with the political leaders. Made a lot of sense. Now, this was not an official government trip. There are a number of members of the Congress who, when they're traveling around the world, will meet with world leaders for things other than a political issue. And it's these little small groups of people who meet in the name of Jesus. And so I went there to meet with these different leaders in Haiti, basically to send the message to them that there are members of the United States Senate that pray for them and for their country and for their leadership, and that they would be doing the right things for their country. So I had those kind of meetings with the different leaders. They were pretty much kind of taken aback. They just didn't expect that kind of discussion to be coming from, quote, a United States senator. But they were heartfelt discussions. And in the case of President Preval, who followed on to Aristide, became somewhat involved in our prayer breakfast, the national prayer breakfast that takes place in Washington in February every year. And I think these kinds of meetings with leaders on a spiritual basis are another means of developing working relationships that will bring about good, hopefully.
You went to Haiti several times. What's the biggest thing the Haitian people taught you, Senator Connie Mack?
Well, that's a good question. One of the things that I guess really surprised me about the Haitian people was how, for some reason, the word docile comes to my mind. These are peace-loving people. They are spiritual people, but they live in an environment that is just, it's hard for any of us who've never been there to really believe how bad it really is. So I guess I don't know whether it's a lesson as much as it was a challenge to try to figure out how can we be helpful to the Haitian people in the improvement of their lives. So I think that would be the biggest impact that I've experienced with my trips down there. You can come away with a sense of what can we do? It seems like there's nothing that we can do. Things just continue to get worse and worse. But we can't give up. We've got to help spiritually and economically in every possible way.
Speaking of what can we do, there's a lot of people in America on both sides of the aisle that say there ain't no hope. And you write this book late last year, Citizen Mac, Politics, An Honorable Calling. Boy, that's old school, okay?
So a friend of mine said, as soon as I told him the name of it, he said, oh, it's a fiction. what I'm trying to say there, you know, it's an honorable calling, doesn't necessarily make it an honorable profession. And, you know, it's up to each of us who makes the decision to get involved in politics to make it an honorable profession, to do the right things. So the calling was a very serious, honorable calling in my respect. I believe that my grandfather, my step-grandfather, and I believe my life in the 18 years was an honorable calling. And I deeply believe that it was a calling based on a love of country.
Connie, we're living in crazy times where an 8-year-old girl is not allowed to read the Dr. Seuss books, but she can have a sex change operation without her parents' approval. What's going to happen?
Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen other than to be optimistic. We've gone through some very, very tough times in this 200 plus year history of ours. And we've come through back to that freedom is the core of all human progress. If you allow free people to debate ideas, you have to believe, as I do, that in the end, we're going to come up with the right decisions. One of the concerns right now is this: can we really have a free debate in this country when we're seeing our major tech companies that are basically censoring what's being said? It's not bad. It's bad enough to be censoring, but they do more than that. They use these platforms to manipulate people's perspective. And I think that's probably the biggest issue that faces the country today.
You've met a lot of phenomenal people. One of your heroes is your late brother, Mike.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, he had a spirit about him that was just unbelievable. Here's a guy that was in his last year of law school, last year of law school at the University of Florida, when he's told that he's going to have this major operation where they can kind of do what they call radical neck surgery for the melanoma. He did not give up. He didn't drop out of school. He had the surgery, and he finished number one in this law class with high honors. And this was a young man who was brilliant, who had a sense of humor second to none, who had a talent. He could play the piano. He could play the guitar. He could sing, and he just was such an uplifting spirit. My brother Dennis and Mike and I basically grew up together. Went to school together, went to college together. We were college fraternity brothers together. A dear soul. And those last years of his life where we were together so often, and most of that time in lots and lots of pain, had such meaningful discussions. He really touched my life, changed my life.
As our time winds down together this night, closing thoughts, if you will, to the people listening.
Well, I guess in line of what we were just talking about is don't give up hope, don't despair. Be very cautious about the information that you receive. Check it out. Much of the stuff that we're being fed on these social media platforms are in some cases just out and out lies, others a manipulation of information. So there probably has never been a more important period of time in the history of our country where we as citizens have a responsibility to really dig into the information that's being given to us. If we do that, I'm optimistic that we will continue to be that great country that we've been in the past and we're destined to be in the future.
Senator Connie Mack, a.k.a. Cornelius McGillicuddy, you are a great American. Thanks for all the service to America, to the cancer cause, and to the world. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.